hyper-focus on something once I get into it. And right now I'm hyper-focused on this. So my last two hyper-focuses have been good for me. One was about making money, I mean, Bitcoin, and the other is about living long enough to spend it. So you got to get on the first wave.
You're a man of your word.
I am. And so when I say something, I usually follow through. I've always thought that it was going to be possible to live to 200. I just thought my wife, Kathy, and I had missed the wave. But I thought my kids would live to 200 easily. All of a sudden, I realized I could make the wave. And I started the 200-year life project, which is my personal project.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today I have Gary Leland with me, and he has been doing podcasts for decades. He's not just early in podcasts, he's a pioneer in the podcasting world. You know, before anyone even had heard about podcasting, to building in Bitcoin very early. And now he's doing something that people think sounds pretty much impossible. He is going to become the first human to live to 200. And I can't wait to hear about it and share it with you guys. So thank you so much for joining me today, Gary.
Oh, it's great to be here. And now the question is, how many of your viewers and listeners laughed when they heard that? Because usually when I tell someone that, they laugh in my face. And they think I'm just joking with them. They don't realize how serious I am. But, you know, when I told them that people would buy stuff on the internet, you know, when I started building my first website back in 95, they laughed at me a lot then too. And I said, well, I would buy stuff on the internet. And when I started podcasting and there were like 50 podcasters and I was like telling people about it, they said, that's stupid. That's never going to catch on. Everybody got a radio in their car. And then, of course, when we talk about Bitcoin, you know, they told me that's just made up internet money. What in the hell are you doing, Gary? So if they laugh at me, I'm kind of used to it. But I have a good track record.
Yeah, I mean, you have a history of being right. It's crazy to think that when you were, you know, in the sporting goods industry even, you came out with the first line of pink football
equipment. Softball equipment for girls. I didn't do any marketing and it just caught on like wildfire, and I decided girls would like pink softball equipment. No one made pink softball equipment. And men didn't use pink back then. So you couldn't get it at men's sites where they mostly shopped, and I couldn't even get them. So I started having companies custom make. Like Mizuno made 1,000 pair of pink cleats for me. Louisville Slugger made pink backpacks for me, all these people. And I had a whole line of pink stuff. And the greatest softball player in the history of softball, I met her at the Olympic pre-games and we were talking, and I said, it's Lisa Fernandez. I said, Lisa, have you ever heard of my website, softballjunk.com? And she goes, thought for a second. She goes, are you the guy with the pink softball equipment?
You're always forward thinking. You have this vision for the future and what's missing, you know, in the market, the track record in general, just being able to come up with these ideas and actually do it big. You know, it wasn't just, you know, you sold a few things online, like an Etsy store. You did it real big, you know, and you were not just starting a podcast early. You were in the Podcast Hall of Fame, you know, so you are in the Podcast Hall of Fame. You do it big when you do it and you do something different and people laugh at you for it, you know, but then, I mean, how does it feel when you see these people that maybe have known you all this time and, you know, questioned you or doubted you? Do they just totally trust you?
They don't say much about e-commerce. You know, that I don't hear much about. And they don't say much about podcasting. But they do all say when I see them now, I saw the other day someone I've known for years and years and years. He goes, I can't believe I didn't listen to you. I should have known your track record. I didn't listen to you when you told me to buy Bitcoin. You know, when you were telling everybody to buy Bitcoin. Because when I first got in, I'm like any Bitcoiner. You know, I was telling everyone I knew. You know, to me, Bitcoiners are like Jehovah's Witnesses. They got so many similarities. Most people don't think about it, but you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, I don't know if you're very familiar with them, and I don't know these numbers specifically, but I know I'm correct. Only a certain amount of people can go to heaven. Maybe it's 100,000 people. I don't know, 70,000, 200,000, whatever. There's a certain amount to go to heaven. So they're all not going door to door on Wednesdays, you know, because they think it's going to help them get into heaven. I think most of them would realize there's so many more entitled people than them that it's going to be hard to pass those people from, you know, the time of Christ onwards. But they're doing it to share the goodwill and stuff like that. And Bitcoiners are like that to a degree, because they don't think their stack is going to improve if they get you to buy some Bitcoin, but they want you to also know the word about Bitcoin and take advantage of it. You know, so I used to really, I guess I try to orange peel people very heavily. And when I'd get to, they go, well, now how do you make money off this? And I go, well, I don't. I mean, you know, but the price will go up if I buy some probably. I'm going, yeah, really, you're going to have to be like buying $1 billion worth to affect the price, you know, so.
Right. Yeah. It's such a big market cap. And that's what I think about too, because people, even if you get a lot of people to buy a little bit, you know, there's always going to be that redistribution of wealth. You know, somebody's going to sell some, you know, to live life or do whatever they need to do at some point. So it just kind of just trickles back into the market as new people come in. So it just levels it all out eventually.
No, you're really trying to share the word with them so they can take advantage of this opportunity and with no looking for nothing in return, you know, except for maybe when they're sitting back in 20 years going, oh, that's a, you changed my life, Gary. Then you go, that was nice to hear. Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah. And I think it's because when you feel that sense of hope for the future as a Bitcoiner, you feel bad for the people that felt like you did before you knew about it and you knew that there was an answer, an escape from inflation. So it's a terrible feeling.
Yeah, but even the people who contact me, like my friend Bill the other day, and said, I should have listened to you. I'm just an idiot for not listening. I go, Bill, it's not too late. That's the same thing people said when it was $1,000. They were too late. You know, the people who bought it $100 said they were too late because they knew people that got it in a nickel. People that bought it $1,000 said they were too late because they knew people that bought it $100. So on, so on, so on. And we're still at that point now. You know, it's
right. And I think people, they look at the price and think because of the price, it means I'm late. But Bitcoin's growing faster than the internet mm-hmm. did. And we're only at like 3% adoption. So, and with the amount of the supply that's already circulating and all that stuff, but it's,
we're probably at 1998 internet terms, you know?
Right. But that means, I mean, to think that it's at that price and we're only at percentage of global adoption is insane.
Yeah. Stop looking at the price and just start buying stuff. Now I just tell people to buy and don't buy if you're not going to hold it 4 years, you know, cause they mm-hmm. get scared out. And yeah. And I really quit orange pilling people I knew because they would buy it. And then inevitably, like every time you buy a big purchase, then they go down. It seems like, isn't that what you feel like? God, I bought, no wonder it went down. I just bought mm-hmm. some. I mean, how many times have you heard that? But people will buy it. You know, maybe they buy it in the middle of the cycle while it's going up even. And then before you know it, 2 years later, it's down. They sell. They go, I lost money on that deal. I'm not doing it again. But then it goes right back up. You know, they just, so now I get I say, don't do it if you're not going to hold it 4 years. No matter what happens, you got to hold it 4 years. So buy as much as you can afford to hold for 4 years.
That's so true. Yeah. You can't look at it as a short term making money thing and getting scared because, you know, people get shaken out so much. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And somebody once told me something that I loved was, how much of my money should I allocate to Bitcoin? You ask them, how much do you understand about Bitcoin? Do you feel like you kind of understand it? Do you understand it fully? Are you 100%? The more you understand Bitcoin, the more comfortable you feel allocating your wealth fully over to it if you understand it very well. But if you just don't understand it, then put $100, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like just, you don't really get it. So just,
you know, in 2020, I had a friend of mine, I orange pilled and I had dollar cost averaging. That's the best way to orange pill someone is dollar cost mm-hmm. averaging, you know, cause then they get emails and they read them and it starts going up a little. And usually within 6 months they go, wow, I kind of understand it now. Cause if you got skin in the game, you pay attention to it. But anyway, I talked to him and I think he was putting $100 or $50 a month into it. And then 6 months later, he called me one day and he said, Gary, I finally get it. I understand Bitcoin now. I just bought $10,000 worth. I said, well, good. I'm glad to hear it. And then there was some FUD about 6 months ago going around. I can't remember what it was, but I was concerned that he would be worried with the price drop and the FUD that was going on and sell his Bitcoin. You know, so I called him. I hadn't talked to him in years and said, hey, I'm just calling you, Robert, because I want to make sure you know that this, whatever this FUD was, isn't going to happen. He goes, oh, you don't need to worry. I bought that. It was $30,000. I sold it when it was 50 and I did great. And I go, you don't have any anymore? And he goes, no. And he goes, well, it's 70 now. It's going to get 200 by the end of the year, probably. He goes, that's cool. I'm cool. I made money off of this. Okay. You know, so he didn't understand it is what I'm saying. That was my point. Yeah. He really didn't understand Bitcoin, or he wouldn't have done that.
No, it's so true. I had someone that did that too. They were really gung-ho about dollar cost averaging. And the next time I saw him, I think it was because it had gone up. I think they sold around like 70, but I think they bought somewhere around the same price, but they got terrified when it went up and came back down. So they kind of broke even, and he's like, oh, at least I got my money out. Because that's the thing, they're dollar cost averaging too much because they think they're going to do this thing and then they get freaked out. And then they think they're going to just buy it cheaper, which yeah, it could drop. But by the time, you know, you play these mind games when you're a trader, somehow you end up selling Bitcoin at a cheaper price and you end up buying it back higher. That's like what people do when they eventually buy back again.
They do. And then they're pissed. And then sometimes they're so pissed, they're not going to buy back in because they're going,
yeah,
I can't do that. I just physically can't do, mentally can't do it. You know,
right. And then they think it's too high of a price now compared to what I had gotten it before that I sold it. So I'm just not going to do it at all. And it's like, what? That's why if you dollar cost average, it's better to do an amount that's not going to scare you and you think you're going to need, or, you know, something that you can afford to put as savings and just put it aside.
Yeah. You gotta look at it as being an investor, not a trader. You know, you're not trading. This isn't a stock. A lot of people still get that confused. And more so probably now with ETFs, but you got to look at it as you're investing in something long term. You're not like getting in and out of something. You know, you've got, and that's why I say I tell them they got to stay in at least 4 years. I don't know if they do or not, but I sure am glad I made it 4 years, you know, well, or 8 years or, you know, on and on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, thinking about it like an investment, like your home. You don't check your home price every day and you don't look at the chart of your home price to say, oh my God,
exactly.
Sell it now, it's going down.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're planning on living or having this thing for long-term, like you're living in your house, you're not just going to sell it if you get scared. That's kind of like the same way. That's the same way.
And I think, most boomers too, especially in boomers that have IRAs and stuff, you know, in their investments, I doubt they sold their IRA last week when it dropped, you know, a lot with the stuff going on in the Middle East. You know, they just ride that through, and that's what they got. Now, they may get rid of a stock if they think that's, if they're doing the stocks, you know, in their thing, they may get rid of a stock. But people who are in the funds and stuff, they really don't pop in and out. They need to more like that.
Yeah, they just kind of look at it and they think, wow, that's crazy. But they're not actually jumping in to sell stuff.
And if their funds went down 2% in a day, they wouldn't have a heart attack and go, I got to get out of this. I'm losing my mind. But they do if Bitcoin goes down 2% in a day.
Well, you know, I do have something. And I know we were going to, you know, we're starting off this conversation. We're going to lead it into, you know, the conversation about your journey to 200 and also tie it into Bitcoin, which I'm excited to hear you talk about. But I do want to tell a story about my mother-in-law during COVID because she's the boomer age. And she did get scared when the stock market started to fall. And she had had her money in stocks for a long time. And she was scared that, you know, with COVID, everything was just going to go to zero or something. Like, she thought it was just going to go, you know, she would lose all her money. So she did sell. And then she got hit so hard with taxes, you know, because she actually, you know, over the years had made profit.
Right.
So she had to pay a huge chunk back. And then she ended up buying the stocks back higher anyway, because she just bought them back after the initial dip, you know. That short period of time of like super fear. So she did, it's like a trap. It's like a fear trap, you know, and people do that. So that does happen to some.
Oh, for sure. And you know, Warren Buffett, you know, he says the hardest thing investors have to do is to do nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, just doing nothing is the hardest thing investors can do, you know, but it's true.
Right. Yeah. I had also another guest who, he had lost his, he was mining Bitcoin early on and he would take out his hard drives and put them in a box. And he forgot that he ever did that. And then like 14 years later, you know, he was in a tough spot in his life and he thought, man, I should buy some of that Bitcoin stuff with the money I do have. And he goes, I think I might already have some. And then he found his hard drive and he was able to recover all of it. So if he would have had access to that, he would have sold it 10 times over.
Yeah. But he didn't know where it was.
He didn't know. He didn't even know. He forgot he even ever mined it. It was just sitting in a box.
I've heard stories like that several times. I know a real good friend who had some, I don't know where he got it at, but he's a Bitcoin maxi now. But at the time, you know, in 2018 or 17 or 16, whatever, he bought like $1,000 worth of Dogecoin, you know, and then when Doge went up to, he didn't even know he had it. It's the same thing because it wasn't worth anything. And then when Dogecoin went up really high and got over a dollar, he said, I think I have some of that somewhere. He said, I had to go through like five or six old laptops trying to find it. And he ended up having like $150,000 worth of it on there or something, wow. You know, so he was really excited.
Yeah. But did he sell it?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people, they think it's going to go to $2 and no. They don't sell
it. No, he sold it at a high because he was, like I said, he believed only in Bitcoin at this point, but that was when he first started when he bought it.
Right.
Yeah. And that happens, you know, people get into Bitcoin, you talk them into Bitcoin and they buy some Bitcoin and it's, let's say, 75,000 where it is right now. And they go, and then they find out more about Bitcoin and they go, well, you know, if Bitcoin started at a nickel and it's $75,000, maybe I could buy one of these other ones. And if it just went up to a dollar, I would be okay. You know, if I bought it for half a penny. So if it went up to a dollar, five, I don't need it to go up $70,000. So they get into the pool of the gamblers. You know, now you're gambling on that. You're not like investing anymore. You're gambling. And so, and
I
then.
Think it's that, yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that's very normal for a newbie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of that fiat mindset where you don't realize yet what money really is and how money works and how it's really based on nothing. So you just kind of think that any of these altcoins can go up because money is magic. You know, you like it's just a number on a screen. So people kind of don't realize that it actually is associated with liquidity and global market. And then you can't just have 100 cryptos all be the price of Bitcoin. You know what right. I mean? And you can't, you know, it's not going to happen. So you're playing darts, you know, with which one do you think is going to have
any? It's a pure gamble. You're just saying, I'll take a wheel. I can afford to lose $100. You know, I'll take a wheel. $100 loss versus $1 million gain. You know, it's worth the gamble. But you know,
right.
That really does apply to Bitcoin. You know, it really does, even at these prices. You know, if your timeline is long enough, you know.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But that's why I think that you talking like you are on the Bitcoin Boomers podcast that you're doing, you know, with George and Lawrence, you guys are reaching another audience as well, people that trust, you know, people with experience. And I personally had someone who saw Lawrence on my show, someone that comes to my salon, and he was so excited one day he came in and he told me he bought Bitcoin after hearing my podcast with Lawrence. So, you know, and he's a boomer and he has this retirement account and he was not sure what he wanted to do with it, but he converted all of one of the accounts over to Bitcoin. And I was proud of him because, you know, some people like hate on Bitcoin treasury companies and stuff, but I think they're great for people who already have their money tied up in TradFi. You know, they already have their money tied up in the system. That guy wouldn't have wanted to take a 30% tax hit, you know, to sell his,
right.
You know, his retirement to go buy actual Bitcoin. So that was a smart move, you know, at least give it something that has Bitcoin exposure and move it out of there into Bitcoin. And then when the price dropped, because he bought it at, you know, a little bit higher price than it is now, probably $20,000 higher. I thought he was going to come in and be like, oh, you know, I sold it at a loss. What'd you talk me into? You know, but he was actually so excited. He goes, now I'm taking my other account and I'm converting it. And I'm buying more Bitcoin with it. So I was really proud of him. And that was because of Lawrence and he wanted to read his book. So after he saw the episode with him, he ended up getting the big print. And
Lawrence is a smart guy. Larry's a smart guy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably the dumbest guy on that show. And, you know, and I'm happy with that.
The dumbest guy who created, you know, all this stuff with your podcasting and with your sporting goods, forward thinking, you know.
No, so that shows how smart they are.
Wow. That's nuts. Yeah. But you guys together are amazing, you know, so it's nice to have a place where, you know, it's not just because a lot of people don't trust a young person. They think, well, what do you know? You know, you haven't been through life. So they want to actually see from somebody who they're like, you're already successful. Why are you getting Bitcoin? You know, like, why do you need Bitcoin? So they want to hear from you guys.
Yeah. Well, I was successful when I got into Bitcoin, you know, and then by 2020, I went all in. I put everything I had in Bitcoin, you know, my investments, everything, you know, because I was about the time Sailor got into it. You know, I moved all into Bitcoin. But it took me a while too. It took me that I think it normally takes most people three hits to move over, and it took me three hits for sure. Someone asked me, Marty Ben asked me one day, and I said, well, and I was telling him about the opportunities I missed and how much Bitcoin was when I missed it, starting at like $150. And he goes, oh yeah, that's pretty typical. Three hits. That's what it normally takes, is three hits to understand it. And it definitely
Three hits meaning
three times being
being
exposed to
told,
it. Yeah.
oh, being exposed to it.
Yeah, being
Okay.
having someone explain it to you, or trying to get you to buy it, or however you want to look at it. But
That's interesting.
usually in the first hit, you don't go, oh yeah, let me give you $5,000 and get some of that stuff. You know, most people pass it by and then they hear about it later. And they go, yeah, I have heard about that. Joe Blow was telling me about that. And by the third one, you know, they've heard it twice now, and now they start to recognize it when they see it on the news and things like that. And by the third time, they're ready to be educated, you know.
That's why I love what people that create, clothes like Bitcoin clothes or, the Bitcoin shoes I have, the BitBlock
You're
shoes I
so
do.
cute.
But they're amazing. I mean, I love when some people don't want to wear Bitcoin gear because they have this like fear of, oh, people know that I like Bitcoin
Well,
or whatever.
yeah, I
But
don't wear Bitcoin gear anymore. I fall in that where I
yeah.
wore it everywhere. I mean, now I
Oh,
don't wear it
really?
anywhere.
Well, I think it's fine, but if people do wear like, even a hoodie or just like a little symbol or something that maybe somebody just notices, it can be like that first hit maybe
Right.
for somebody.
I'll wear things like Unchained had a hat this weekend they were giving away, and all it has is the Unchained logo with no words on it. I'll wear something like that because a Bitcoiner will recognize that. And they'll come up and go, oh, you're a Bitcoin. So I'm cool with that.
Do you wear the sats symbol on your clothes at all, or is that too much
No,
too?
I don't wear that at all anymore. But yeah, I just don't want some guy, you know, and I'm in a different situation than you are. I don't want some guy seeing this old man, he's sporting Bitcoin stuff. And he goes, oh, that guy's got some Bitcoin. And then coming out saying, oh, this is an easy target. And then I'm worried about $5 wrench attack. That's all I'm worried about is $5 wrench attack. I mean, I'm secure, but a $5 wrench attack, I mean, you know, they start cutting my fingers off, they'd probably cut off all my fingers. And I go, he's right, we can't get to it. You know, and I certainly don't want that happening.
Well, you know what I wonder when people talk about that? I just have a, like, what if somebody has a separate seed phrase and they're like, hey, all I have is $1,000, and then they're happy with, oh, I got 1,000 out of you. Like, how do they
Well,
know? Like,
they have wallets, you know, that are made that way. The wallet has a wallet in the wallet. So, you know, so when you go to the wallet, and I'm probably not explaining this right, but because I don't use it, but when you go to
I
the
think I
wallet,
know.
you see $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. But if you continue and enter the next step of the C phrase, I guess the real wallet appears. You
But
know.
then they're all, you're right. I've heard of that. And then I've also wondered about so many people using multi-sig now, including companies and corporations.
Right.
So would wrench attacks be so much less common because they figure people that have amassed a decent amount of wealth in Bitcoin have maybe not held it in like
Well, you've
storage
got
for
to
that reason?
assume they're Bitcoin smart enough to know what that wallet is. You know, you've got to assume they know what a multi-sig is. You know, what if you've got somebody who's going, yeah, I know these Bitcoiners. Some of them got a lot of money, and they go to something, a meetup, and they're not really into Bitcoin, and they see someone who's an easy target, you know, and they follow them home, and they go, all I know is Bitcoin's worth. He only got one. This guy's probably got one. Look at this guy's house. You know, so, and you're a.
But then in the same case, if you have a bank account and they're like, you know what, I want you to transfer me a large amount of money
Sure, it's
and
a
I'm going
lot
to send
harder,
thousands
though,
of
than it is to get it, because I know they can get that Bitcoin right now if you got it in a wallet.
That's
Whereas a
true.
bank, it's going to take a business day and a transfer. There's more to that.
But if they know where you live already, then they're like, I'll be back tomorrow if you don't do it.
Well, that could be true. I still think
I'm just.
there's more chance of doing it and not getting caught with the money. But you see it happening in Europe. It's been happening in Europe for years. I mean, it's not a new thing.
Yes, it is something that you don't want to make yourself a target for sure.
And I
But
find
I just
myself
think
going to less meetups now than I used to. I used to go to like one a week, and I think I went to one like a month ago, and that's the first one I've been into in 8 months. You know, not that I don't like, as you can tell, we're talking Bitcoin, and you can tell by meeting me this weekend, I enjoy talking Bitcoin. But I am also 70 years old, and I want to live to 200. I don't want to live to 73, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. And that's why going to your BitBlock boom was an event, you know, it was something that you threw, you know, it was, you know, there's a paywall there, you know, people can't just come there and like you actually have to go because you intend to go there and connect with other Bitcoiners. So you're not just meeting up at some random bar with people you don't know. So it's definitely, it makes you feel like I'm connecting with people who are actually here for a purpose and they can afford to be here or something, you know, fly here, whatever it is.
And as you saw, we have armed police there the whole time, you know, so I mean, if anything does happen in the police station's like a block away. Yeah. So, I mean, we can have quick response.
Yes. No, I totally get that. I understand. And I think that that's even when it comes to, you know, podcasting and just anyone knowing anything about you when it comes to your privacy. So many people worry even about privacy and how much people know just about you, even if they don't know much about your, you know, net worth and stuff like that. It's like just putting yourself out there, you can be a target. So it's always good to stay safe and take every precaution when it comes to Bitcoin for sure.
Yeah. And I don't think people realize when they're starting out that, but later as their stack gets more and more valuable, then they'll do like me and I'm going in and erasing stuff, you know, from the net about me. So people, it's not there anymore, you know, and slowly but surely I'm kind of disappearing. Yeah.
Wiping yourself out of the internet. That is definitely great advice and something that, I actually was doing too, honestly, now that you mention it, I was actually doing a little bit of scrubbing on Instagram because I made myself more public and I had so much, you know, personal like photos and family stuff. So I was taking a lot down just so I can have my,
I removed my family from my Facebook page. You know, no one can look at my Facebook page anymore except for about 80 people, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are things you have to do.
Right. So yeah, those are smart precautions to take for privacy. So now let's get into your journey because you are honestly, like you're not just talking about this, you're not just saying it. And this comes from your background as, you know, a podcaster, I think is why, because you are not just, again, saying you're going to do this, you're documenting it. You have your YouTube channel, you're actually doing videos and talking about what it is you're doing. So can you tell us about how you got this idea and what makes you think that?
Well, actually, I've always thought that it was going to be possible to live to 200. And I think that might be a short amount of life. But I've always thought it's possible. I just thought my wife, Kathy, and I had missed the wave. We just weren't going to make it. But I thought my kids would live to 200 easily because of technology changes and things like that. But when AI happened, which wasn't that long ago, just last year, all of a sudden I realized I could make the wave. And in August of last year, I started the 200 Year Life Project, which is my personal project. I mean, it's not like I'm getting people to join and become a member of a club. So don't think it's anything like that. This is me, what I'm doing. I'm doing the 200 Year Life Project. And my goal is to be the first person to live to 200. And actually on that subject, I had someone the other day tell me I wouldn't be first. Someone was older than me already trying to get to 200. And I said, well, you know, if he's like 75, that's like being 10 feet ahead of me in a 100-yard dash. A lot of stuff happens. Car wrecks, plane crashes. I mean, you know, tornadoes. I mean, you know, I might be perfectly healthy at 130 and die in a car crash. I mean, you know, so I started working on it and moving 90% of my focus to life longevity. And I actually document everything I do. I create videos about what I do, audio podcast on my site. I have that. I have blogs on why I do things. I have my personal database on there. You can see what I do every day, what supplements I take. You can see how I create my protein shake that I have for lunch. You can see what I do to go to bed at night and sleep.
And this is on your YouTube channel?
No, this is on my website, Gary Leland, GaryLeland.com.
Okay.
And then all my video links to all my videos are there too, of course, but just the videos are on YouTube. But I was a pretty sick puppy. There was no way I was going to make it to 200. Anyone that goes and watches the first video in the set, I think I've done six. I'm not doing them every day. I'm just doing them as I feel like it. But watches the first one. I go over how much I destroyed my life. I mean, you know, I started smoking at my house in my bedroom with my parents' permission when I was 14. You know, that's how long I'd been smoking. I could smoke in high school when I went to high school. If you had permission from your parents, you could smoke in high school. Yeah. And
like in the school?
Yeah, in the classroom, you know. And it at one school, at the vocational school, because my parents wanted me to be an electrician. So when I went 2 hours a day to vocational school, you could smoke there in the classroom. But at the actual high school I left from to go to that, you had to go outside to the smoking area. They had an area for the cigarette smokers, you know, and you couldn't, there'd be a teacher guarding the entrance to that area of the schoolyard, and you couldn't go in there unless you had your smoking pass, you know. So, wow. So it's really kind of hard to believe, isn't it?
But I mean, I knew that there was smoking all over when I was younger, like in, like, I think it was elevators even, and
yeah, you know,
everywhere, restaurants and all different places.
But airplanes, not, I mean, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So where are you from? Where do you live?
Chicago.
Okay. Well, I grew up in South Carolina, and that's right in the middle of Tobacco Belt. My parents were big believers in it, I guess. So, but my
I grew up in a Greek family, and every house had an ashtray inside.
Oh, we had, yeah.
So just sitting around smoking.
We had, we had ashtrays there, and I smoked a lot. By the time I gave up, I was like 3 packs a day, you know. But I had given that up before, in 87, probably.
You're probably better off too, giving it up at that year, because it was probably prior to them adding a ton of chemicals.
Probably. To the cigarette. Well, I only did it because the price. I always said I was going to quit when it reached a dollar. I said that for years and years and years. I said it out loud to people. Yeah, I'm going to quit this when it reaches a dollar. And I walked into a convenience store. Kathy and I pulled up, said I got to get some cigarettes. We'll be right back. And I walked in and came out with, he goes, where are your cigarettes? I said, I just quit. They were $1.04. And so when I say something, I usually follow through. And I hadn't had a cigarette since, because they were $1.04. Now I've saved the time of money, hadn't I? But
see, you're a man of your word.
I am. If I say something, I'm going to follow through. But I destroyed myself, and I go in there and I slept 4 hours a night. You can't do all these things and live a long, healthy lifespan. And people don't realize. I was telling someone this weekend, I don't think people realize how different they are when they're healthy than when they aren't healthy, or they would get healthy. I mean, if they realize the difference in how you feel when you're healthy and not healthy. But to get back to the question, that's what started my rabbit hole down the health world, was the fact that AI came out, and I already believed it was possible. I just didn't think AI would come out in my lifetime. And so that's the deal, I guess, short and sweet.
So how did you get to the number 200? Is there some sort of, like, do you think because of exponential growth of AI or S-curves, or can you give us your thought process?
Yeah, for sure. 200? For sure. I think now that AI is out, well, first of all, you've got to understand life longevity is going to be probably one of the most lucrative businesses there are, I think. I mean, let's face it, how many trillionaires and billionaires they are. If you're a billionaire, would you spend $10, $20, $30 million? That's just a part of your stack. That's not even that much to get life longevity. Yeah, you would. So it's not, it's like, and I'm talking one of the most lucrative businesses that is done by individual people, not companies. You know, there's got to be more money to make out of servicing that than there is anything else. And then you take and look at, you know, the supplement market. I mean, you go in the grocery stores now, they have your better grocery stores not only have a supplement department, they have a person working a desk in the supplement department. So if you're going, do you know where the creatine's at? Sure, let me show you where it's at. So they are so many people doing this already. So, but I think it's going to come in waves. I really do. I think right now the average lifespan, if you make it to 65, your lifespan average is way longer than the average person. Because the average person is including someone who died at one. Well, that really skews the mix, doesn't it? But if you take 65 and over, it's a much higher thing. But your average lifespan is now is like 83. Okay. And then you die. And, you know, if you want to live past 83, I think what's going to happen is with AI, and the reason I brought up earlier is the money to be made, we're going to come up with ways to extend that from 83 to, let's say, 103. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the first wave. 83, and it could be 83, 100, it could, whatever. It's going to be 83 to something. It's not going to go from 83 to 200 is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So you got to get on the first wave. And then during that first wave, you know, let's say it happened when I was 80, the life extension came, and I'm going to live now to 105 probably. Well, during that time period, it's going to increase another 20 years.
You're crazy. It's crazy to think of that.
And then during that 20 years that you just got extended, it's going to increase another 20 years. And actually, in all reality, if it does make it to 200, you're probably just at the beginning. It's probably going to make it to 400, you know, or 500. You know, if they get to that point that they actually are. If I'm actually right, it's probably going to go to 400 or 500. It's not going to go to 200, but I'm going to 200. People laugh at me already with two. If I said 500, they really laugh. So I'm just shooting for two. But the thing is, to be healthy physically and mentally when the waves start. You know, if you are so unhealthy that you're stroking out and everything, you're not going to make it on the first wave. You aren't going to make it to the first wave. And you want to be healthy. If you can be healthy and do so, Kathy and I do everything. We don't do a lot of things we did, and people think we're idiots because we're not having any fun anymore. But we want to make it to the first wave, and that's our goal.
You guys are having fun.
Yeah, we are.
People think it's I'm not drinking or I'm not smoking, so that's not having fun. But you guys, like, hanging out with you guys,
you're the
most fun people. In, you know, when we were there, it was so much fun talking to you guys and hanging out with you. Just the way you converse and just hang out with us, it was great. You know, so people think having fun has to be drinking.
No, we don't drink anymore. We don't do anything anymore. Anything bad anymore. And Kathy's a great person to hang out with. I guess that's why we've been married 43 years. So I probably can't stay with her 200 years, you know.
I love it. And you guys are both on the same page with this. Like, so you had this, you're like, we need to get healthy. We need to, and you know what? That could be part of it, because if you're somebody who is not happy in your relationship or not happy in your life, you'd be like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, another 100 years, like, we're going to live together longer. But when you enjoy, you know, your spouse and you love doing things together.
We do everything together. A friend of mine the other day said, that sounds terrible to me. Okay, whatever. You do everything. I said, literally everything together. So
I think that's amazing. And I think that's what people would do if they actually were in the same situation. Because they don't have that, they can't imagine how that's a good thing or how that's something you actually would like. But it's rare. You know, I think what you have is rare. And that's why what you're doing is rare, because maybe people don't have even the, you know, the hope for the future that you have, because, you know, having Bitcoin too. And that's something that we discussed, was if you could tell people about how Bitcoin ties in with why people would choose this.
Right. And Bitcoin's a big part too. I mean, not only are you, when I tell people that I'm going to live to 200 and they finally find out I'm serious, especially when I'm telling boomers, because boomers have a different way of thinking about this. They go, I don't think I'd want to live to 200. That's the first thing I usually hear. And I go, well, why is that? And I know what it's going to be. And there's two reasons. Number one is I don't want to be in a wheelchair that long, you know, or something, because they're assuming they're going to be sickly. And they're just seeing themselves in a wheelchair with a feet in their arm being rolled around going, that's 200. You know, I'm going, I plan on being healthier at 200 than I am now. You know, I don't plan on being in a wheelchair, dragged around in a wheelchair till I'm 200. And the other thing which really makes a lot of sense, this one makes more sense than anything, is they go, I don't have to work that long. And for instance, if you're a coal miner in West Virginia, nothing against coal miners, but you probably don't want to mine coal for another 100, if you're 70, for another 130 years. You know, you just don't want to do it. Or, you know, there are a lot of, but I plan on having, without working, having more money when I'm 200 than I have now, you know, and that's thanks to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is a real part of life longevity, because of the fact what will happen eventually with the US dollar, how Bitcoin will probably become the world currency, how little Bitcoin there is, how many people will need it. So it's a big part of being able to enjoy living to 200 years or 500 years or 1,000 years, whatever ends up happening. Because
imagine part of the life longevity would be, you know, eating right, exercising.
So yeah, for sure.
You need that free time to take care of yourself and do the things that your body needs to stay healthy. But when people are working themselves to the bone and they're exhausted when they come home and they can't do something that's good for their body or eat healthy. So working too much for too long, people think even now that they want to retire in a fiat world and they keep having to work longer and longer and they feel like they'll never retire.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who are working on life longevity who are like me and understand what's going to happen and their goal is to live there have not taken into consideration, you know, being able to financially afford to live to 200. I mean, and if the dollar crashes and disappears, and I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but it's going to happen before 130 years is up, you know, so you've really got to be prepared to that. And if the dollar crashes, you know, what traditionally happens in a country when their currency crashes like that, the country falls apart and people start leaving, you know, for wherever they can, and the government starts shutting it down. They don't want everyone leaving. They have to have a workforce. You know, if everybody leaves, they have no workforce. And a lot of people now are going to themselves, you don't have to have Bitcoin. I got my money in land. I got it in houses. I got it in this or that. Yeah, try dragging your land and house with you when you're fleeing to South America or Asia or wherever. You're not going to be able to do it. You need something that you can flee with. Get wherever your destination is. Pop your words in there and have your Bitcoin with you. You know, so that's a big necessity that people aren't thinking about what's going to happen when the money disappears. They're going, I got all this land, you know, but, you know, you aren't going to want to stay here because you aren't going to want to stay, you know.
And what happens if everyone starts liquidating their stocks because they are all having the same idea?
Well, you know, the stock market traditionally, from what I understand, when a country is falling, does pretty good until it falls.
Does it?
Yeah. It's not like it's just, it's like right now, stock market's going crazy. And that traditionally happens. Guys are printing money. You know, because that's the cycle starting. They're printing money. The stock market's getting a lot of money to invest in the stock market. You know, but traditionally, I believe the markets do pretty well. And I could be wrong. I'm not saying every time. Just from my back of my mind, what I remember reading, seeing, information gathering.
But that would mean that they're due pretty well until.
Yeah, until the crash happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they're jumping out of skyscraper windows. Which everybody you heard after the Great Depression crash. So then they're jumping out of sky.
So bad that I smiled. Why? I don't know what. That's why I try to teach people about Bitcoin. I'm not smiling because I'm evil. I'm smiling because I try to tell people about this as much as I can.
And I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer or Donnie Downer or whatever. But that's what another reason, another thing people need to think about if they want to do life extension. But you got to get plastics. There's so many things, so many life changes we've made. We've incorporated everything at GaryLeland.com. Matter of fact, if people just want to go to GaryLeland.com/data, D-A-T-A, you can see all my protocols. That's my Google sheet that has everything I do on it. You know.
Well, I can't wait to take a look at it because my husband's a PE and health teacher, and he's always teaching kids about health and how to be healthy, and he's always telling me, you know, giving me tips on what to do to, you know, because my diet isn't always the most balanced. I'm not always eating enough protein or fiber, you know, in my diet. So he's always trying to be like, you got to add something, you know, what did you eat today? And I'm like, you know, it's just like having at least balanced meals. So.
And my protocol is not up to date too, because I've been so busy the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. I haven't changed the things that I've tweaked. Mm-hmm.
But still, even things that you talked about, I think even the microplastics was one of the first things I saw. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I'm glad we used to use, Keurig, you know, for the coffee all the time.
Yeah. You got to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. But we do have we have a coffee maker, but it's not like made of, got like a plastic.
You can't get rid of plastic. You just can't do it. All you can do is try to lessen it as much as possible. And your coffee, boiling hot water, going through that filter, coming through the plastic, is just leaching plastic into you. You can't get away from it today, though. So you're just—it's like bottled water. I haven't drank water out of a bottle since August. You know, a plastic bottle. Matter of fact, at our party Friday night, I wanted some water, and all they had was bottled water, and everything else was alcoholic. So we're going to change that next year for me. So I had them take the ice bucket and take a cup in there and scoop out water out of the bottom where it had melted. You know, so I could have some water that was not in a plastic bottle. But the thing is, the tray, the scooper, the glass were still plastic. Right. You know, but it had not been sitting in a plastic bottle for months and months and months, traveling. A lot of that stuff comes from other seas, so it's in a container, you know, getting boiling hot probably, who knows. So it was less plastic. You know, that's all you're doing is trying to lessen your plastic.
Right. And even I think the consistency of water, when you drink out of different containers, it like almost tastes different. Like if you drink water out of metal or like, you know, or glass, you know,
yeah,
it takes on different properties.
Well, like my water's in metal. I have a metal mm-hmm. straw. This is silicone, not plastic. You know, because when I take this in the sauna, it's like 130 degrees in there. The straw gets hot. I wouldn't be able to drink out of it. So I had to get a tip on it so I could drink it when I was in the sauna.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so that's a silicone tip on the metal straw.
Yeah, not plastic. Yeah.
Yeah. So microplastics, yeah, definitely. I don't think people realize the effect. And there's so much what I found. So pretty much clean diet, you know, exercise, there's certain things and vitamin regimens, you know, that would be something yep. really interesting to see what you have found to be most effective.
And like we do a sauna every day. We don't miss it. You know, that I just saw a study the other day from, I think it was from Norway. In Norway, they have more saunas per person than they have cars. I mean, they're really big in the saunas there. And they did a study over 20 years of people in saunas there, I think was a study, and it showed that saunas actually sweating like that actually helped with dementia, preventing dementia. The amount of dementia was less in that group than it was in the other test group. You know?
That makes sense because not because I know anything about the dementia portion of it, but it makes sense.
I don't either. I just saw that and I said, wow, that's interesting. I didn't even know that. So,
I mean, I'm sure, I think just there's, I've even heard just, you know, exercise for the brain and stuff like that. But I think when you, what I noticed was the best health I was ever in my life, or also shape of my life, was when I was doing even strength, all the stuff, but it was when I was doing hot yoga and I would, it was like dripping. It was like sauna style.
Well, that's what this is. That's what this is. And then we make sure and wipe it all off so our skin doesn't reabsorb the stuff that we got out of our body, you know? So you gotta wipe it off or you just reabsorb it, you know?
I heard that too. Yeah, you have to either wipe it or rinse or something. But, and George has even talked about getting us, like he's talked about, like, can we get this, like, I don't know, portable saunas? Like, he's talked to me about that. That's pretty funny.
Well, we're gonna get we're gonna get our own sauna here. I mean, but Bitcoin's gotta get back over 100, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, those are all. And what if, like, I wonder if hot tubs would be the same then in that case.
I don't know. I honestly have never done any looking into hot tubs, but there's just so many little changes you can make. I tell you, though, the biggest change that you can make that's going to help you be okay when that first wave comes is sleep. And if you're really serious about this, you need to, and I'm not showing them because I have no affiliate code, is get you like a Oura ring or an Ultra Human ring. I use Ultra Human and track your sleep. Oh my gosh. That is the first time. I used to get the price of Bitcoin when I woke up. I mean, you know, not immediately, but I'd go turn the coffee on and stuff, and I'd sit down and get on my phone and start doing stuff. And I'd say, how much is Bitcoin? Did this? Now, first thing I do is look at my ring stats and see how my sleep was for the night. Yeah, because most people don't realize when you sleep, you know, during a certain part of your sleep, your brain actually shrinks a little. And the liquids in your brain wash out the toxins and the things that don't need to be there. If you're not sleeping properly, you never get rid of that waste in your brain. It's called brain waste clearance. You're never clearing out the waste. So you really, that's the first thing I do is I look at how long I had REM sleep last night and how long my deep sleep was. I don't care about my total sleep, REM sleep and deep sleep. And I want to know how much it was. And I want to know, and my ring will tell me you were hot last night, or it took a while for your heart rate to drop into your sleeping heart rate. It'll tell me all kinds of stats. So
it even tells you your body temperature.
Yeah. You were hot. Here's a great story. This is a great story. We went to went to Texas Tech, and we went to her homecoming. First time she's been there since 77, you know, so we went to her homecoming this year, and she had some, we couldn't get a hotel. We decided to do it too late. They just weren't any, it's not a real big town. And so a friend of hers, she'd known since high school, said, you can stay here. So we said, great. We stayed there. Oh my gosh. We sleep at like 65 degrees. I mean, you should sleep in a cool room. They slept at like 75 degrees. We were actually sweating. And when I woke up the next morning, I looked at my stats, my ring, it said, did you have a fever last night? You know, because it knew that I was higher than I normally am. So it knew, it thought I had a fever, you know? So yeah, the ring tells you so much information.
Yeah, because I have an Apple Watch that tracks my sleep, but it's not good because they die all the time. They don't last.
It's nothing like this. It's nothing. Now, you can incorporate your Apple Watch into your ring, so it'll pull out those stats too, like when you're walking and stuff. But it'll tell me when my caffeine window's over. It'll say, oh, you had plenty of sleep last night. You can have an extra hour of caffeine today if you want. You know, maybe normally it's over at 2, but today you can have it till 1:30, you know, or things.
Well, have you noticed like what kind of difference since you started using that?
Well, it's a big difference because now I do things to try to improve it. I go, man, I know where I messed up at last night. Like I messed up last night. Night before last, I had 10 hours, you know, but I was really super tired from being in the conference all weekend. Last night I had 6.5 and I like to get 7 to 8. You know, or I like to get a score of 85 and above. And my score last night was 79. You know, I don't care. Like I said, I don't care how long I sleep. I look at the score. The score is going to tell me all my stats, how it, you know, what it is. And if I can get a score of 85 and above, I'm tickle pink. You know, so that means I got the maximum start of the day. I got plenty of energy. I got plenty of brain waste clearance. I got everything I need. You know,
that is such a great tool.
That's what you got to do is sleep's the number one deal.
Yeah, and I think I get decent amount of sleep, but I wake up at night a lot, and I don't. And
well, now I wake up. I used to wake up every 2 hours a pee. Now I wake up like once or none, you know, because I started working. Sleep is a full-time job to get to your sleep level. You got to make it a full-time job until you get there, and then work part-time to make sure you stay there.
So when you get a full night, like a good score on your sleep, do you ever feel the need to take a nap during the day?
No. I don't take a nap. I was at the point I was like, oh, I got to go in the bedroom. I'd sneak in there and lay back in the chair and take a nap. But no, I don't take naps anymore. You know, even if I don't have a good sleep, I don't take naps anymore. Here you go. Here's the deal. The whole deal in a nutshell, since August, doing what I'm doing since August and not knowing what I was doing, but absorbing enough information to get better and better and better and better. My weight is the same weight I was in high school. When I started this in August, I was like 230. Now I'm 184, I think 189, something like that. It varies from day to day.
And you haven't changed anything diet-wise?
Yes, I have. I have. I don't eat a lot of stuff. I don't eat pasta anymore. I don't eat bread anymore. I don't eat candy anymore. I don't stop and get a candy bar at the grocery store. Yeah, I've changed drastically. But
do you feel like you're maybe the way you've gotten rid of that mental waste and your brain is functioning, do you not maybe have the cravings that make it easier
no.
to stay away from things?
Once you stay away from things long enough, you don't need them. You kind of like break the addiction to it. But weight is just one thing. I used to have to take blood pressure medicine for 20 years. I'm off blood pressure medicine. My last bi-yearly checkup, my doctor said, oh my gosh, your blood pressure is perfect. I said, pretty good, hon. And she goes, no, it's perfect. I said, oh, wow. Okay. And I don't know the numbers because I don't keep up with that stuff. Then I used to also take prescription antacids every morning and every night. Don't take any antacids anymore at all. I'm through with all that. I used to wear a CPAP. Don't wear a CPAP anymore. You know, so like I said, all those things not having to do, and all those things are bad for you. You know, CPAP's not bad for you, but it sure wasn't helping my sleep. But when I'd roll over, because I roll over a lot, you know, I'd take it off to go to the bathroom. It was a chore. It kind of woke me up. I had to take it off, get it back on. And I hated that thing. But
so it's like you have the sovereignty over your health, and you have, you understand that there is, you know, you have a choice and you can reverse things if you play an active role in
yes.
doing it and actually wanting to be healthy.
Well, like I said, if people knew how much better they feel when they're healthy, they would all, but they hear that, but they don't bring it in because it's not easy, but it's not that hard. It's kind of like stacking Bitcoin. It's not that hard. You don't have to do it all at one time. You just do one little thing. And when you get that one and you're comfortable with that one, you add another thing to your stack. And like my sister, you know, she said, what should I start with? I told her, she contacted me and said, what should I do next? And I said, let's do this next. Week, month later, what should I do next? So as I'm giving her like a stack, building a stack for her, things to do to help her live longer too.
That's amazing because it reminds me of one of my, like early in my podcasting journey, I had one of my Bitcoin Army friends join me and he's really into health and he runs, you know, he had like a running community, you know, about people getting healthy together, but he called it dollar cost averaging your health.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, DCAing like a little bit at a time. It's like one step at a time when, you know, you're just kind of building, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good way to look at it. But yeah, you just gotta, man, and some people, like I said, some people don't understand it and they don't want to live to 200. And that's fine. Everybody can some people commit suicide every day. Some people, some people want to live a long time, some don't. Who knows what's going on in their life, And, some people have a miserable life and they're happy yeah. that it's coming to an end, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's,
I had a great life and I'm going to have a great life. So I want to live as long as I can. And the thing is with Bitcoiners, mm-hmm. most of them go, I'm creating generational wealth. How many times have you heard that? I'm creating generational wealth. Well, that's fine and dandy, but you don't have to die and leave it to them. You can enjoy that generational wealth and take care of that generation. If you're,
right.
If you're worried about your kids can't do it on their own, you can go, I'm going to take care of the generation later. Oh, hold on. What's up, honey?
Are you on your show?
Yeah. I'm just talking to myself.
Tell her I said hi.
Okay, cool. Well, Stacy said hi.
I love her.
Okay. So you can create generational wealth, but you don't have to give it to them and die. Mm. You can enjoy your generational wealth and then take care of your kids. Buy them a house, if you want to buy your house when it's like $10 million of Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Pay your kids way through college if they want to go to college. You can do that. You don't have to die and leave it to them. Because what happens? Right. What happens? The first generation knows how hard you worked. And they can kind of appreciate that. Second generation, third generation just pisses it all away and they're in bad shape again. So you'd probably be doing your kids a favor if you stayed alive and took care of them rather than just giving them money.
You know what it took to get there. Your kids understand, but then it gets diluted.
And it ruins the third generation because they haven't worked. They've had a silver spoon. And because you see that all the time. You really do from super rich people. They're by the grandkids and great grandkids. They're all spoiled, rotten brats, getting in trouble all the time. They think they're better than the law. They deserve a break. So you're better off. If you really want to take care of your kids, stay alive and take care of them.
Right. No, that is such a great point. And then you could pass down the stories for longer about what it took to get here. And when you're one of the pioneers of this world, like you're a pioneer of, the podcasting world, starting into this technological world, the e-commerce site, all this stuff that's leading into technology, you are now building the tool that can help people have the free time later in life to continue to take care of themselves. So you want to stick around and see what you've built. It's kind of like nice to see the world that you've helped shape. So that's kind of...
That's the difference between Bitcoiners and shitcoiners, Stacey. Mm-hmm. Shitcoiners, I'll start with Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners... They both don't have a problem with being rich. Let's just face it. Both of them don't have a problem with money. But Bitcoiners realize they can have money and help change the world. Okay? Bitcoiners say, you know what? In 25, 30 years, I can live the lifestyle I never dreamed of and help change the world. Shitcoiners go, I just want to make some money to hell with the world, as long as I get my money. So that's the difference. They aren't thinking about how the world can be changed by what they're doing at all, because they're going to be in and out of that shit coin before you know it. So
that is such a great distinction.
Yeah. Yeah. I truly believe that. I feel that when I talk to a Bitcoin, that's the attitude. Not when I talk to a guy who's into ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs or something. But when I talk to someone who's buying Bitcoin, holding Bitcoin, they watch information on Bitcoin. They know what Bitcoin is. They can talk about Bitcoin. And they know they're changing the world.
It's like, because you donate your time back to the education, you donate, you want to help and you want to actually, you have like a, I've noticed Bitcoiners have that selfless, more modest attitude, like personality type.
Right.
Like they're not, not many of them, I would say.
Well, as Matt O'Dell says, stack sats, stay humble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that's so true. Yeah, so it's a bright future, and there's things we can do. I am definitely going to look into that ring because that's a great tool. I mean, honestly, I don't like so many gadgets, but I think that gadget would help me with and other people. It would help a lot of people just understand their sleep patterns and how to get better at it, because you don't always realize that you are harming your body or not getting enough sleep.
Right.
And oh, one last thing. Mm-hmm. Did you say some kind of sheets are good for sleeping? Like to help?
Yeah, we use grounding sheets. I can't remember the brand, and I'm not trying to promote any grounding sheets. But yeah, we use full grounding sheets, top sheets, bottom sheets, pillowcases. And when we travel, we have an extra set of pillowcases we take with us. And you, for anyone who's not familiar with grounding sheets, grounding is like the principle that when you walk on dirt or earth or the beach or whatever, you receive, you know, the gift of the earth, basically, I guess you'd say. You're grounded and you receive that energy that your body, people walk around without shoes forever. And we're like made to be part of the earth. We're not made to be, never touch the earth. And grounding sheets do that in two ways that grounding sheets works. They're sheets. They got silver wires all spread through them, tiny wires spread through the whole thing. And you actually take a plug and you plug one end to the sheet or the pillowcase or whatever you're doing. Like the top sheet has a plug to it, wire, bottom sheet, pillowcases have plugs. And you have two ways you can do it. You can actually run the wire outside and they drive a spike into the ground and they hook the wire to that. And it receives the grounding from the ground. I've never tried that. The other way you do it is you plug it into the wall. In the third hole, you know, there's three holes. There's a negative, a positive, and a ground. The plug that comes with it has got two plastic things that do nothing, and the metal's in the ground. So when you plug it in, it's not plugging anything in but plastic. So the negative, positive don't work. But the ground electricity goes through the plug, goes through the wire, goes into the sheets. And I tell you, we know that is some things we do and we get rid of, and I take them off the database. That's something that we do so much that we bought an extra set of sheets so I don't have to take them off the bed. I'm kind of lazy. It just stays in my suitcase. Yeah. We go to a hotel, change, put them on top of the pillows, and we plug them in so we at least have that. It's kind of funny.
Oh my God.
The hotel staff comes in to clean the room and they don't touch the bed with the wire. We figured that out. You got to you got to take the pillows off and the wires off. Then they'll make up the bed. But as long as those wires are on there going, I don't know what that is, but I'm not touching that science experiment. But grounding sheets are very important. And I think I think on my site, GaryLeland.com, if you look at the right, on the homepage, I have some of my favorite items, you know, and they're on there. You know, and the brand I use is on there.
Well, thank you. At least the brand is there too. I'm checking it out. So that is incredible. I can't wait to check out the grounding sheets.
And you need, and you got to go back to regular light bulbs. Get rid of these light bulbs that everybody's using. Definitely get rid of the fluorescent. They're the worst. And get rid of these LED lights. Yeah, you got to go back to regular light bulbs. People don't realize that. There's a lot of things like that, especially if you want to sleep. You don't want to be looking, having light bulbs on LED or fluorescent right before you go to bed. Your brain gets confused and it thinks that's the sun rising.
So it's like the blue light on your phone.
Yeah, exactly. You can get red light glasses, which is what I use. I go to bed at 10, I put those on at 8. And I've changed most of the bulbs in the house back to, you know, regular light bulb, or fluorescent light bulb or LED light bulb. But from what I understand, if you put a camera on it, really super slow motion, it's turning on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. But you can't see it. But your mind can pick that up. But if you use a regular light bulb, it does the same thing too, but it's actually on fire in there. So it never goes out. Actually, you know what I mean? Not like the regular lights do. It's not flickering like they are.
So it's like a flame.
Yeah, it's like a flame. And it does, it wants to go out, but it's not gonna. So what would be the going out? It comes back on and the fire has never disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah, I didn't realize it was like the phone, because we know the blue light keeps you awake and that's terrible. And everybody's selling LEDs like everywhere you go.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's harder to find light bulbs. You know, we've had to order them online, light bulbs, and replace the LEDs. Yeah, and it's one light we can't find the light bulb that fits. So we have to do,
especially in your bedrooms, I guess, right?
Yeah, we have our bedrooms done with regular light bulbs. We have our master bathroom done with regular light bulbs. And we have a lot of regular light bulbs, to be honest with you now. I mean, anywhere we can switch them out, we have, you know.
I love it. Is Kathy with you on the same, like looking up what to change, or is it more?
It's me. I'm the kind of leader on this. She's always been wanting to do this, but she needed someone to take charge. And I'm kind of, I hyper-focus on something once I get into it. And right now I'm hyper-focused on this. So my last two hyper-focuses have been good for me. One was about making money. I mean, Bitcoin. And the other is about living long enough to spend it.
That is amazing. That's a great combination. And I think that's definitely kind of how a lot of people find Bitcoin, when they have that hyper focus. So that is, I was going to ask you about personality traits, but you just answered that for me.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing with us today about your journey. I can't wait to follow more of your journey and to make sure that we do things that are better for us so we can enjoy our future. and live longer. You know, to 200 would be the goal. And let's start at 200. How about that?
Well, here's the, if I'm correct, and it's, I make it 200, it'll probably be 500. Let's face it. But the thing is, this is a no-lose proposition for me. If I make it to 200, it's great. If I don't, if I die at 130, that's great. If I die at 90, that's great because I've had a great health and I've been feeling better. And no one, no matter when I die, no one can give me a hard time. I'm dead. Who cares? They can't come up to me and go, ah, I knew you were crazy. I mean, so it's a win-win for me. I can't lose on this deal.
But I mean, like you said, AI just really just kicked off like a year or two ago max. And then now it, when you think about how much could change in 10 years, that's why that that first threshold that you're talking about, that first wave is about 10 years from now. So, I mean, we have only seen, like, look how much AI has changed the world in a year.
Yeah. What will happen is for every 2 years, before long, for every 2 years, you'll age a year. You know, that's how it'll start. You'll actually be getting older, but the speed of getting older will be slowed down. Then maybe for every 5 years. And at some point, it actually will be age reversal. You know, that your body will start coming in, that you'll learn how to lengthen the telomeres on your DNA, and your skin will get unwrinkled, and your cells will grow back like they used to when you were young.
Your ring might get an update to do that.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Well, Stacey, I have enjoyed it so much, and I have another interview probably in about 10 minutes, I think. So probably in 7 minutes.
I appreciate you spending the time with me. Thank you so much for joining me today and, you know, giving us all of your insights. And it's been really great to meet you and Kathy. And thank you for having us.
And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not your doctor for sure, if you're listening. I'm just telling people what I do and what I know. And I could be completely wrong. So check with your doctor before you do anything.
Yes. And I don't think anything you've said is actually anything dangerous. So it's a great disclaimer. So thank you for saying that. And have a great day. And I'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.